Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Part 5. Is the story of Johnny Finch, who spent his entire college career wanting to be a professional poker player, saving up all of his money, going to his first big tournament, and being knocked out on the first hand, and figuring out what he's going to do with the rest of his life now that he's kind of having to become a grown-up. What you need to know. Johnny's fiancée, Dawn, has talked about how they both need to get jobs. Johnny has interviewed at pretty much every place in the small town of Ravensport, Illinois that he can think of, or that she can think of, and now they're having to look for work outside of the small town. Johnny, who doesn't much like change, is nervous about this. Dawn understands, and is putting together what is known as a resume party, where their friends will all get together to put together resumes to put into the mail, looking for a job outside of Ravensport, Illinois. And that's where we pick up. Chapter 9. Sunday night, Dawn had her apartment all ready for the resume party. She had a new box of fresh paper for printing, extra ink for the printer, envelopes, stamps, and a box of label for the computer to print. On the dining room table, she had bags of chips, pretzels, and other sorts of munchies, as well as a crock pot filled with Sloppy Joes, store-brand hamburger buns, and a bunch of cut-up vegetables that would mostly go uneaten and would be later used in soup. Johnny was in charge of bringing the beer and other booze, since that was the most expensive part of the party, and James was always able to get a lot of it for a pretty low price, as long as no one went with him to get it. She'd been ready since around noon, but no one was supposed to show up until around 6, so she waited and watched TV absently. She hoped things would go well, but was worried, not just about everyone getting along, since her friends and Johnny's didn't mix well at times, but about Johnny dealing with the fact that if they wanted decent jobs, they were going to have to move. Johnny had told her he didn't want anything to change. He wanted to spend his life hanging out with his friends, playing poker, and being with her, and it was a nice fantasy. However, she knew things had to change. Johnny's day of interviews were just as bad as the months she'd spent trying to get a job when she first got to college, and found out that her parents weren't going to be able to help her pay for her dorm room books or anything else. She'd gotten a student loan for most of her tuition, but everything else had to come out of her pocket. And when she got to school, those pockets were pretty empty. She'd had to work her way up at the nursing home, and even after 4 years, she hadn't moved up very far. She'd started washing dishes, and was now helping the staff with the jobs they didn't want to do. There were days when she got to spend time with the clients, playing board games, watching movies, or reading books to them, but most of the time it was janitorial. She thought about how much the job sucked most of the time, and how she couldn't wait for the day when she could say, "I won't be here in 2 weeks." But it seemed very far away now. She then thought about how hard all of this was for Johnny, and it made her upset. Not at him, though. It wasn't a case of him dragging her down because he was a lazy slacker, like Val seemed to think. It was more a case of things changing in a way that she knew Johnny would have trouble with. She'd thought back to how they met. He may have been the most aggressive poker player in the area, or so people told her, but he was almost painfully shy when she met him. They had a psychology class together, and he always dragged himself in as if he'd only woke up 10 minutes before class. But he was cute, and engaged in some interesting discussions when the professor would let them dig into the philosophical issues of what they were studying. She noticed that he always looked at her when he came to class, but when she'd look back, his eyes would shoot to the board or to his desk or some other place, as if he didn't want her to know. She asked him out for coffee after class a month after waiting for him to take the first step, and that's where it started. She told him she wanted to work with teenagers because there hadn't been anyone around to help her and her friends when she was growing up, and he confessed that he was just in psychology to try and get more information to help him with his poker game. She quickly learned that while he talked like he was a ruthless player who only cared about winning the next poker hand, he was really a soft touch and spent a lot of his time helping out his friends. After 2 weeks, they were pretty much inseparable. Her next semester was her hardest of her school career, and Johnny was the one who got her through it. Her father had gotten incredibly sick and had to go to the Mayo Clinic for problems with his stomach. Johnny drove her up to see him every weekend, even though it was a 6-hour drive. Most of the time, he'd be waiting for her after her last class, have the car ready for the trip with her favorite soda and munchies, then he'd drive into the night so that they could be there first thing in the morning. With her dad sick, her parents weren't able to pay for any of her college expenses anymore, and it took months for it all to get straightened out so that she could get a grant to pay for her part of her junior and senior years, but Johnny quietly used some of her poker winnings to pay the bills as they came due. He had trouble telling her he'd done it, and wasn't keeping it a secret to lord it over her at a later date. He just said, "Well, that's just what you do for the woman you love." As far as she knew, he never told anyone about it. He wouldn't have even told her if she hadn't been having a panic attack when she found out some of her bills had been paid, and she was sure her parents had cashed in their house to pay for her school. She didn't quite get the whole poker thing, but it was easy to tell he was good at it. The other thing that really surprised her was that even though he did next to nothing in any of his classes, and only showed up the minimum number of times, he passed every single class he took, showing that he was probably a lot smarter than he let on. Still, even with all of this, he was a pretty easygoing guy, which surprised her. The poker tournament was an aberration, and most of the time he reacted to things that upset him, the way he had when she'd let him know that he was looking for work out of state. He'd quietly say what upset him, let it drop, and work through it on his own. He'd done that with the job search, keeping to himself for a day, then at the last possible hour, going over to the university and getting the disc for accounting and management jobs in the same state she'd gotten. He'd given it to her last night before she went home, saying he'd work on his resume today to make sure it looked good. She looked at the clock and saw that people would be showing up at any time. She flipped the TV to one of the music channels they offered, and flipped through until she found something fun enough that people would want to listen, but not so fun they'd quit working on resumes. She went to the window and looked down at the parking lot to see if anyone had shown up yet, but none of the cars were there. She looked back at how different her apartment was than Johnny's house. Sure, he shared it with three other guys, but their place looked as if a bunch of people lived there. Granted, a bunch of people who didn't much care if anything they owned got put away or cleaned, but her place was cleaned to the point of looking like the kind of apartment the building owner showed possible new tenants. Her books were quietly put away in the extra closets. She didn't own much in the way of DVDs or CDs. She didn't read magazines, and there weren't any on the counters or tables, and she wasn't able to go to sleep if the dishes weren't washed and put away. "I wonder if people think about how different Johnny and I seem," she said out loud. Just then there was a knock on the door. She opened it, and the first of the guests arrived. Chapter 10. "First-hand Finch," Tommy said when he got him alone in the kitchen. "Hey, Tommy, does everybody know that story?" Johnny said. "Are you kidding?" Tommy said. "At the car dealership, you are a local legend. There are people who would line up around the block to play cards with you now." Johnny laughed and said, "Maybe I'll take them up on that in a couple of weeks. Right now, my therapist can't even get me to look at a deck of cards." Tommy smiled and laughed. He was the boyfriend of Becky, one of Dawn's friends, and lived here in town. He was a big bear of a man, a little over 6 feet, with long black hair that was starting to show signs of thinning on top. He had deep-set eyes and a tan that only came from spending every possible hour outside. He was the kind of guy who woke up at 2 a.m. to hunt deer the first day of hunting season and fish till midnight the last day of fishing season. Johnny didn't know him well, but if Becky liked him, he had to be a decent guy. "Are you two really moving away?" Tommy said. "I don't know," Johnny said, leaning against the wall and taking a sip of his diet soda. "There aren't any jobs around here for what we went to college for, and I'd hate to waste Dawn's education." "I hear you," Tommy said, stuffing half a sandwich in his mouth and swallowing it after a few cursory chomps. "I felt the same way after I got my auto repair certificate. I got lucky and found something at the Ford dealership. They pay a little over $15 an hour, and they let us belong to a union, so we've got benefits. Feel bad for the sales guys. They're on their own. No one buys a car, they go home hungry. Lately, they've been hungry a lot." "No one buying," Johnny said, thinking about how hard it had been for him to even get a job offer from the lowest of possible employers. "But you keep busy?" "Damn right, busier than ever. When people can't afford a new car, they keep the old one running no matter how much the repairs cost. And with all that computerized shit in cars, you can't get your buddy to fix things under a shade tree. It's a good living." "I should have gone into car repair," Johnny said. Outside the kitchen, Val was sitting at the computer, typing away and making sure the printer didn't jam. Everyone had an assigned job, making the whole living room look like an assembly line. As a new resume came off the printer, it would be matched with the cover letter, shoved in an envelope, and the label would be attached. Then James would apply the stamp and give an update on how many he'd stamped every 20 or so letters. He would then toss them into a cardboard box that they would take to the post office the next morning. So far, everyone was getting along. The women were chatting with Wendy, who was Rob's new girlfriend, and the men would be staring at Wendy, Rob's new girlfriend. She was pretty, but they were staring at her ample chest as much as they could get away with, and Don was sure that if she asked any of the men what color her eyes were, Rob would be the only one who had a chance of getting it right. They'd kept busy, so there hadn't been a lot of conversations between the two groups, but with both Johnny and Tommy in the kitchen, things were slowing down. "We've only got about 20 more letters for you, Don," Val said, still watching to make sure everything worked right on the computer as she simultaneously checked her email and engaged in two online conversations. "Then it's time to put together Johnny's," Don said, making sure it was loud enough that Johnny could hear. "I'll be there in a minute, but I didn't know they accepted resumes for crack whore," came his reply from the kitchen. "Hey, don't make fun of crack whores," James said. "That's got to be a really bad job. Not as bad as high school guidance counselor, but there can't be any job as bad as that." "How about assistant to the crack whore?" Don said. "Okay, that might be worse. Let's get one of each and ask them," James said, dropping another handful of stamped envelopes in the box. "At least now I know how you spend your Saturday nights," Val said, barely loud enough to be heard. "Oh, God," Becky said. "Can we please have one night where we all get together and it doesn't turn into Val versus James? We should put the two of you in a cage and let you fight it out." "No," Johnny said. "Thunderdome. Two men enter, and one man leaves. Two men enter, one man leaves." As he kept repeating it, the others picked up on the chant, and they stopped stuffing envelopes and repeated it as if they were extras in the old Mad Max movie until Val finally said, "All right, already. As long as he doesn't set himself up like that anymore, I'll be nice." She spun back around in her chair and grabbed her cane, started running her fingers over the top of it, a nervous reaction to all the attention being paid to her. "Okay, that's all of mine," Don said. "Now the hard one. We have to start work on all the places that Johnny can work." "I've already got everything queued up," Val said, not turning her attention away from the computer screen. "Are we ready to print?" "I don't see why we need to," Tommy said as he came out of the kitchen. "Once Don gets a job, he could just play poker to meet his bills. It's not like they don't have poker games everywhere on the planet now." Rob chimed in and said, "Yeah, if he can find money games in this toilet of a town, he'll be able to make money anywhere he plays." "No," Johnny said. "I'm done with playing poker for money." The room stopped. Everyone turned toward him except Don, who had heard this before. Johnny grabbed a bunch of envelopes and said, "Let's get going, okay?" "No more poker," James said. "That's blasphemy. It's like Jesus saying he's turning water into Diet Coke." "Can we just drop it?" Johnny said quietly. "No," James said, his voice a little louder than it should have been. "We can't. You're turning into a pussy because you got beat in one tournament." Val spun around in her chair, fire in her eyes, and ice in her veins. "Excuse me? Pussy?" "Hey, can we all just calm down?" Johnny said. He started to say something, but Don cut him off. "Val, please let it go. James, he said he's not playing for money anymore, and this isn't the time to talk about it. Can I please have just one night where all of us getting together doesn't turn into a night that makes talk radio look dignified? I have neighbors, and they don't much care for having a show without dinner." Val picked up her cane and started spinning it around her hand. She was an expert at it, and it spun so fast that it looked like a small propeller. Don secretly hoped that it might rise her up into the air and help her fly away. "I just don't think it's very polite to be calling people that in mixed company. You gentlemen can do that in your little frat hovel, but here in civilization, I hope you'd hold yourself to a higher standard." Becky and Tommy looked at each other and snuck into the kitchen while Val was talking. Meanwhile, the new couple, Rob and Wendy, were next to each other. And Wendy said, "Are they always like that?" "No," Rob replied. "Sometimes they really don't get along." "And why did we come over here?" she asked. "Because it's cheaper than going to a movie and we have better seats than at a play. In other words," Wendy said, "I should have brought popcorn and Junior Mints." "Exactly," Rob said, and then squeezed her hand. Meanwhile, James had gotten up and walked over to the door. I have no idea where you get off talking like you're some sort of high society debutante, he said, when you come from the same crappy little town that the rest of us did. You're not some high-class New York artist. Your dad works as a security guard at the old strip mine, and your mom makes quilts for the scenic drive, and you are just one stuck-up bitch. Can we please stop, Don pleaded. Not yet, Val said. All you have to complain about me is that I act like I have a little class and sophistication, while no one talks about you as the elephant in the room. You drink all the time, you're high more often than not, and the only people who don't know that you're a petty thief are the people you steal from. Notice, I only talked about you and not your parents, who are decent people who I enjoy the company of. At that moment, there was a knock at the door. James opened it, and Kyle was there, holding a full plastic grocery bag. He saw James standing there, and everyone else arranged in the living room at the apartment, looking as if they were in shock. "Hi," Kyle said, looking confused. "Sorry I'm late, but I couldn't get off work. Did I miss anything?" "Me leaving," James said, as he stormed out the door and left Kyle standing there. Kyle watched James take off down the hall to the stairs, and then looked in the room again and saw that Val was putting her cane down and turning back to the computer. "I see you two continued your hate-hate relationship." "He's an ass," Val said, "and I don't have to put up with him being one toward me." "He was being an ass toward Johnny," Don said, "and they do that all the time." "Why do you excuse his behavior? If he didn't get mad about me confronting him, he would have gotten mad about something else. He's disturbed," Val said. "Still, it's getting old that the two of you can't be in the same room together." Johnny saw that Val was gearing up for one of her traditional withering outbursts and said, "It's getting late, and I still don't have any of my resumes done. I don't want to break up this wonderfully emotionally trying scene, but I'd like to not be relegated to digging through dumpsters next month for lunch. Val, you said you're ready to go. Is everything in position?" Don looked at him, and he shot back a quick look that let her know they'd be talking about this later, and she said, "Yeah, I want all of you out of here by midnight so I could start my binge drinking." They all started work on Johnny's resumes, but it was a lot quieter than when they were working on Don's. And Val didn't say a single word through the night. Chapter 11. Later, they were lying in bed, holding each other and listening to a CD being played quietly in the alarm clock on Don's nightstand. Johnny was on his back with Don curled by his side. They'd been lying there quiet, holding each other for about a half hour before either of them spoke. "I have to ask," he finally whispered, "where did you learn to do that? I thought that only happened in porn movies." "Val showed me," she giggled, and before Johnny could answer, "with a biscotti. A big biscotti. So I have to thank Val for the fact that my sex life just went from fantastic to utterly mind-blowing? I've told you, I don't like you calling it that, because there's no blowing involved." "Cute," he said, and he ran his fingers through her hair. "I don't think we should have our friends get together anymore." "Our friends are fine," she sighed. "It's just that Val and James have active hatred for each other. Everyone else got along great." "I suppose," he agreed. "What is it?" she said, sensing he wanted to talk about something else, since normally they would lie like this for a while, talk about how much they loved each other as if they'd just met, and then slowly drift off to sleep. "I'm not going to make any friends if we move. I haven't made any new friends since high school." "And we aren't friends? I'm shocked that you would have so much sex with someone you weren't friends with." "You know what I mean." "Yeah," she agreed, "but you'll be fine. It will do you good to get away from here." "Why?" "Because you aren't pushing yourself. You're doing the bare minimum to get by." "Is this the old you're a slacker talk every girl has with her boyfriend before she gives him a complete makeover and turns him into the guy she really wants to be with?" "No, it's that you could do a lot better if you weren't trapped in this shitty little town talk that I'm going to give you before you start having to choose between job offers in 100 different cities that aren't Ravensport." "I don't want to move," he said. "It was hard enough moving here when I started college." "You only moved 20 miles away," she laughed. "Yeah, but everything was different when I got here. I had to change where I ate, where I went to the movies, where I rented movies," he started. "Oh, piffle." "Piffle," he said. "Both pish and pock," she said, rolling over a bit, resting on her elbows, and putting her head in her hands. "You're scared. You're scared of change, and you're scared that you might have to think of something to do with your life other than hang out with your friends. Why else would you not want to live in this apartment with me?" "Because you're neat and clean, and I'm a horrible slob," he said. "And?" "And," he said quietly, "the guys wouldn't be able to keep the house if I wasn't the one making sure that everything got paid. When I was busy last summer, I left them with a list of everything they needed to do. When I got back, they showed me a notice from the city that if they didn't mow the lawn the next day, the city would send someone and charge them $200. Why didn't they do it before that? James forgot where he put the mower, and no one knew where to look for it. Jesus, God, in a smoking birch bark canoe. Maybe Val was right, she said, burying her head in her hands. If Val taught you your new magic trick, then I have newfound respect for her. She smacked him on the side of the head playfully and said, don't change the subject. He reached down and gave her a pleasant brush of his hand and said, why not? I think that subject is a bit more fun than the discussion of what we're going to do with the rest of our lives. She grabbed his hand and tried to pull it away. Instead, he used her hand to continue what he was doing. She closed her eyes and smiled, then moved both of their hands up and above the covers. Later. Promise? He asked. She took his hand and kissed his index finger softly. She then took it in her mouth and slid it all the way down, held it there for a second, and then pulled it out of her mouth. I promise. Not fair, he moaned, and said, okay, fine. I've sent out the resumes. Is there anything else you think I should do? Just be ready when you get job offers that aren't around here, she said. I'm ready. I just won't like it. Okay, she said, laying her head back down on his chest. You know that things are going to change, though. I just don't want you freaking out when they do. He tucked a finger under her chin and tilted her head up for a kiss. She pulled back a bit and said, were you serious about not playing poker anymore? Yeah, I'm not playing for money anymore. Did you hear what Tommy said? The people around town are waiting for another crack at you, and they haven't gotten any better. You could load up by taking their money like you used to. Johnny shrugged and said, I don't know, I'll think about it. Think about it, she giggled. It's a free paycheck, and you'll think about it? There are times I have no idea why I put up with you. He smiled and moved his hand back under the blankets. A second or so later, she gasped and said, oh yeah, that's why, and kissed him. And that's it for this week's Novelcast. Novelcast will be back in 2 weeks with the next part of All In. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank everybody who's doing the retweeting, to sharing it on Facebook, letting their friends know. I'd really appreciate it if you would do so as well. If you've got Twitter, go ahead, share it on Twitter, share it on Facebook. Go over to the Facebook page, Solitaire Rose Novelcast. Give it a like. The more I can get it out there, the bigger it's going to get, and the more I'll be happy. And we want me to be happy, right? You know who else makes me happy? These guys, my sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. There's a number of podcasts that I'm doing. There's Crazy Comics and Stories over at crazycomics.solitairerose.com, where myself, my friend Joe, and once in a while, our friend Jin Wicked will join us to talk comic books. That drops every Monday. Solitaire Rose Radio also is on the same feed. It's my solo podcast where I interview people who I find interesting. I tell stories. I talk comic history. A lot of different things going on there. Tomorrow there is an interview with artist Paul Fricke, who some of you may know from Troll Lords. Some of you may know from his stint inking at DC. Some of you may know from his children's book, Night of the Bedbugs. Very good interview. Cannot thank him enough for spending time with me. I also have completed my audio biography of Jack Kirby over on the Solitaire Rose Radio. I am also doing a weekly news headline parody at weeklynewsupdate.solitairerose.com. Go ahead, check it out. I've brought it back. I did it for about 10 years back from 96 to 2006. I've brought it back because this presidential season is just too hilarious. Every week, I feel like I need to make fun of what's going on in the news. So check out my other podcasts. I'll be back in 2 weeks with the next part of All In.